coming, Cap D 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 coming.
Ah, man, it's that time of the week. Every week when we talk to the Professor John Clayton. John Clayton is brought to us by Anajar and Levine. Accident attorneys, call 1-800-747-3. That's 1-800-747-3733. Also, want to remind you guys, help the ticket unwrap a smile and brighten the holidays for families in South Florida. Your help is urgently needed by Neighbors for Neighbors. Adopt a family program. Find out more at neighborsforneighbors.org. You guys can get your questions in for John Clayton. You can text the NunezLaw.com text line 67974, or you can call us up 786-360-0790. John, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Not too bad. How about you?
Doing good, man. Doing good. So the Dolphins are taking on the Minnesota Vikings this week, and they've had a little bit of turmoil as they've let go of their offensive coordinator. What has been your view of the Vikings so far this season? Given all that money to Kirk Cousins, this was a team that had high expectations, but it doesn't seem like it's really panned out to where they had hoped it'd be.
It really hasn't. I mean, and I was on the sidelines for the game on Monday night on the Vikings sidelines, so I have a lot of stuff in the Vikings. But first off, I think you can see a disjoin between the coaching staff. That was pretty evident because I know Mike Zimmer wanted more out of the offense and didn't get it, and so he fires his offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo. I mean, and you can see even as the game was going on, there was problems. I mean, they started off. I know that there's a scene at the beginning of the game where Cousins is like, you know, get the play in faster. He's kind of moving his hands and all that stuff. And after the first series, he comes over and he starts yelling at one of the coaches saying, I need the plays faster, which, of course, I think, you know, on a road and a loud place, you definitely need that. And then I know for 3 weeks, Mike Zimmer is saying, run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. Well, they started to run the ball early in the game, but it didn't work because by Mike Zimmer going public and saying they need to run the ball, the Seahawks knew that. And so they were able to stop the run early, and they got away from running the football. Only ran the ball 21 times in the game. They've been averaging 21 running plays a game. And so with Zimmer not happy with the offensive coordinator, he goes. You can see that Kirk Cousins, who is a good quarterback but not a great quarterback, has only been able to produce less than 23 points a game out of the offense. That hasn't been good enough. You can see the offensive line. That struggles with injuries and everything else. They haven't been that good. And then on defense, they're solid, but they haven't achieved where they were last year on a consistent basis. So it's been a disappointment. They'll still make the playoffs almost by default because they're 6-6-1, and most of the 6-7 teams are on the decline, so they should be able to make it. But I can't see them being a factor. Where last year they were a factor, this year they are not.
Do you think that they're regretting going all in with Kirk and giving him the fully guaranteed contract because he was looked upon as the last piece, and it feels like that they're not quite sure now. Like, he just maybe seems like a guy, and they could have just probably kept with what they were going and done just the same.
No, I think they're still happy with him. I think, you know, they're disappointed the season hasn't been. But it's funny because, you know, the scouting report back in Washington was that, again, good but not great, can get you into the playoffs but probably not win. You know, that's carried over. But I think what they looked at is, okay, they got lucky last year with Case Keenum. You know, Case, you can see not doing, I mean, he's doing much worse, even though the records are pretty similar with Denver. And so they figured they got a better quarterback. What they didn't get is a quarterback that was going to get them deep into the playoffs. And so a disappointment. But I think they'd still do it again. But, you know, what it needs to happen now is they need to find a way to get more out of him. And they hadn't done it with this offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo.
What did you make of the ending to Dolphins and Patriots? Obviously a huge thrill for all of us down here. When you saw that all go down on Sunday, what did you think?
We're sitting there in the press box, and you know, I'm probably the first one to saw it, and it's like, oh my God, you know, because it was right toward the ending of the Minnesota game, and of course there was some thrilling things going on there, and actually I was in the Kansas City game, and so seeing that, and it's like, it was just remarkable because, I mean, you see great plays like that, and they're memorable plays, but what you kind of wonder is that you go through history, whether it's the Immaculate Reception, you know, whether it's the fail Mary or whatever, you know, the Tuck Rule, all those things, you know, that was like the turning point in the season and turning point where what it does, it almost defines a new era for a team. Problem is with the Dolphins, it's like, okay, that could be a defining play, but it's going to be the turnaround play that's going to mean something. And you can look at the Dolphin team, they're all stuck in that 8-8 maze.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, that's great to see, but it's not going to be the one that's going to turn the franchise around. But it certainly was a great, great moment and a big win. And again, showing that they do have some advantage when they play the New England Patriots.
It has been crazy to see that they really do seem to have their number down here. But you see a win like that, you say maybe it could be a turning point, but maybe the Vikings are still good enough to make it into that NFC playoff. So when you see this matchup, these two teams taking on each other this week, Dolphins haven't been very good on the road. How do you think that the Dolphins can match up with Minnesota with all the stuff they're going through?
Well, again, if Minnesota continues to play like they have, I mean, at least you know the Dolphins can be in there because it's not like, you know, they're going to go out and they're going to dominate it. Because, again, now we'll see with a new offensive coordinator if they're able to kind of change some things around. So at least it gives the Dolphins a chance. And, you know, both teams are in a similar spot. I mean, you know, both are battling for six seeds. Both need to have the must game for both. Because, again, it's like, you know, if the Dolphins win this one, then they do have a chance. I mean, you still look at the AFC wild card race for the number six spot. I mean, Baltimore, despite the quarterback change that they've made, still has the edge. Indy's the hottest team of all the teams that they're competing against, but at least they're in the mix. And if you're in the mix, just go win a football game. Now, can the Dolphins do that on the road? Good question.
What about the Browns, John? It's one of the Saturday games that I'm looking at. It's at 8:20 p.m. The Browns are going to take on the Broncos, but the Browns have been pretty successful lately, and it seems like they might be developing what could be the future of the Browns organization with a lot of key components starting to feel themselves a little bit. And even as lackluster in the column of yardage that Landry had last week, he still broke a Browns record.
Yeah, no question about it, and they need one more receiver to make things right. But I think you can see that Jarvis has done, as expected, a pretty good job. And I think you can see that even though he's not going to get the head coaching job, that Greg Williams has done a good job of, you know, making them more accountable, making them better. And so it could be an interesting factor in that one. You know, again, they're going to fall short of the playoffs. But the big thing is nobody thought they were going to win more than two or three games. I thought they were going to win five. And the way that they've played and the way that they've won, they've exceeded expectations. But I think you can see that they're at the point right now with whatever coach that they hire and a good off season, you know, now they have a chance to maybe be a wild card team next year. So it's been a pretty good turnaround for them. I mean, they've been having so many drafts and so many, you know, bad things that have happened to them through the years. I think, you know, good things are ahead. Now, what you wonder about is that, you know, if they're going to get a new coach, which they will, probably going to be Mike McCarthy, is that do they keep Greg Williams as the defensive coordinator? And I think that that has to be a solid consideration. I mean, look what happened in Chicago with Matt Nagy. You know, Matt Nagy came in. He was able to kick Vic Fangio. Fangio kept the continuity on the defense, and now here they are. They're going to be in the playoffs. And so, you know, the Browns, all of a sudden, after being a non-factor for two decades, now are a factor.
So the Texans have been on some kind of hot streak. I know they won nine games in a row, and they look like they might be the team in their conference. But going against the Jets, they're only favored by about 5 or 6 points. So I'm wondering, do you think that the Jets have maybe what it takes to go ahead and knock off the Houston Texans, and especially with this hot streak lately?
Yeah, I doubt it, because what you see from the Texans, you know, they go on the nine-game winning streak, but, again, they didn't play anybody, and, of course, they're playing the Jets, which means they're not playing anybody.
Right.
And so, you know, I think you look at the makeup of the Texans, and, again, they have to play games a certain way, because, and you saw it last week against Indianapolis, is that if they have to throw more than 26 times, they're in trouble. And if they're going to be down by more than 10 points in the second quarter, which, of course, they had the 7-0 lead, give up 17 points, they're down by 10. They can't overcome that. And the big problem that they have is the worst offensive line in football. I mean, you look at their two tackles. I mean, they are horrid. And they've had injuries in the internal of the offensive line. And so you have to limit their quarterback, Deshaun Watson, to 26 passes or less. So the more, like, for example, he had to throw 31 last week, and so he ends up getting, what, 9 hits, 5 sacks, and almost destroyed. And so, but again, they're taking on a Jet team that can do some good things on defense. But again, this is a 4-9 Jet team. This should be a win for the Texans.
And is this season saving their head coach's job right now? I know coming into this year, Houston had a question mark over O'Brien's head job, but I'm wondering, is this something that could possibly preserve him as the head man?
Oh, 100%. Because again, I mean, you think about the bold move that he made, is that the fact he realizes how bad that their offensive outline is. And so really, I think it was like October 8th, October 10th or so, they realized, okay, we've got to change things around. We cannot have this quarterback throw more than 25, 26 passes a game. And, you know, with good play calling, they were able to get the most out of that. And so, no, he's in great shape right now. And, of course, you know, he should still win the division. And they've got a pretty decent defense. You know, they've got good parts at the receiving core. They've been able to run the football, and he's been able to compensate for their problems on the offensive line.
So, John, they decided in Baltimore this week they're going to stick with Lamar Jackson, even with Joe Flacco being healthy. Is that it for him there? Do you think there's a shot that he could win a competition, or are they going to move on from him in the offseason?
No, they're going to move on from him because I think you can see that the transition has been made. And, you know, what they're thinking is that, okay, they're 3-1 with Lamar, and they go to Kansas City, and that was going to be the big test because they did three games against horrible running teams, run-stopping teams. And, of course, you can say the Chiefs are in a similar vein, so, you know, maybe this could be one that could be challenging them. But the big thing is that, you know, they can compete despite the limitations of Lamar Jackson throwing the football, you know, because what they have to do is just run. Now, there was a couple of mistakes. Like, one mistake that was made is that at the end of regulation, when the score was tied, they tried to have Lamar Jackson go 75 yards for a field goal, and that was a bad mistake because he ended up getting a strip sack and he almost lost the game before with a missed field goal, but the missed field goal saved them and put him in overtime. But you can see what will happen now because Joe's healthy. Joe's going to be active. If they're down by 10 or 14 points in the second quarter, then they'll go to Joe. If it's going to be like it was against Kansas City, where it's a tight game, they actually had a 24-17 lead with 4 minutes to go, then they're going to go with him. I think the transition's been made, but also they realize there's a limitation because you're looking at a 55% quarterback throwing the football who's able to run but not necessarily consistently throw and you know needs a couple more years or next year to be able to get to the point where he can develop the passing part of the game. But I think you can see they like what they see in him, and what he's been able to do and what John Harbaugh is able to do probably has saved his job.
Do you think that there's a shot, like, is Joe Flacco going to be looked upon just being on a roster next year, or do you think he'll get a chance to start next year, maybe somewhere like in Jacksonville or something like that?
Yeah, I think Jacksonville is going to be the team he's going to go to because, you know, they're definitely going to move on from Blake Bortles, and they've got to get a quarterback. And so when you start to look at the landscape, I think Flacco is going to be in Jacksonville.
John, I'm not sure if you saw this, but the no-look pass that Mahomes performed the other day, I got the NFL Films took a nice little still shot of it, and I've never seen anything like this. Like, I've seen Brett Favre do some funky things with the ball, and maybe Aaron Rodgers might be in the same category, but my God, I've never seen a guy throwing totally across his body and hit a wide receiver slanting in stride across the formation.
Yeah, I was at the game, and so I was the one that was asking the questions in the post-game press conference to Patrick. And so what ended up happening on the 4th and 4, there was a, and again, I haven't seen this many cover zero blitzes in a long time. The Ravens were doing cover zero blitzes the entire game a lot of times. So it was on 4th and 4, and I asked Patrick what happened, because what ends up happening is that he says it was cover zero. He had 11 guys up at the line of scrimmage, and he was trying to get an offside call, an encroachment call against them. Couldn't get it, gets a penalty. So now it's 4th and 9, and so then I said, okay, so now they line up at a pre-cover zero, and they drop two safeties back. Patrick recognizes that, and what they did is that they had Tariq Hill running down the left side, and he was just doing a decoy route. He was just doing a clearing route. But what Patrick knew is that if there's going to be a cover two or a safety or a zone type of play, that Hill wasn't going to be involved in the play, but he would come back toward the middle of the field, which he did, because he knew the tendencies. And so with that in mind, you know, he anticipated that he was going to be where he was. He does the no-look pass, which was incredible, throws it 40 yards. I mean, this shows you how good this quarterback is.
I've never seen a quarterback, and especially, like, Aaron has a little bit of swag to him, a little bit of cockiness to him, but I've never seen anything like this from an age like this young man is doing this at. It's remarkable to me.
It is, and again, it's not just his athletic ability, his throwing ability, what he's able to do, but how smart he is. Because again, I mean, he recognized that here it is in his first full year starting, that the wide receiver is going to do what he did, and he gets a no look pass. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is one of the most incredible young quarterbacks I have ever seen.
If you have any questions for the professor, John Clayton, we got another segment with him. You can call up 786-360-0790, or you can text your questions to the NunezLaw.com text line 67974. We'll be back with another segment of John right after this. Eric here with you. Zaslo and Ember are out today, but we're still talking to Professor John Clayton, who's brought to us every week by Anna John Levine, Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-747-FREE. That's 1-800-747-3733. Got a four-pack to see Marvel Universe live at the BB&T Center on January 10th. We'll give away before the end of the show, so keep on listening for that. If you have any questions for the professor, you can call us up at 786-360-0790. You can text us at 67974. John, so tonight we got a big Thursday night matchup between the Chiefs and the Chargers. And the Chargers have had an awesome season, you know, being 10-3. Do you think in some ways, do you think the NFL will ever consider maybe switching up the playoff format? Because it kind of stinks for them where they're not going to be able to win a division. They're in the division with the best team in the AFC, and they're kind of punished for that. They're going to have to play in a first round game. There's no way for them to get a bye. Has there ever been thought to the NFL going to maybe like an all conference format instead of the divisional?
Yeah, there's thoughts about it, but there's not enough, I think, to support it, because one of the things that particularly the traditional owners and the old-time owners like is that they want to value divisions, because you got six division games, and they still want to have that format where, you know, the most important thing is winning the division, and then you get the home game. And so there's been some kids, particularly at the owners' meeting, you know, there's probably a minority that tries to push for that, but in the end they're not going to be able to get it, because, you know, the value of a division, because one of the things in the division games that you develop a lot of rivalries. I mean, you can see it to a degree with Miami and New England. You can certainly see it with, you know, Baltimore and Pittsburgh and that. And so they're going to stay with that same format. But there are people that do push each year to try to make that adjustment and try to reward teams like the Chargers, who you can say is, you know, one of the top five teams in football.
Yeah, Robert Kraft has to be shooting that down every meeting. He's like, no. Let's keep it the same.
Exactly. I mean, Kraft's going to be there, the Maras, the Rooneys. I mean, you go through the whole list of traditional owners, you know, they're not going to be for it. And again, you could understand it because, again, the one thing is that, you know, even though this isn't a great rivalry between the Chargers and the Chiefs, you know, it can start to develop into that now that the Chargers are good, the Chiefs are good, and that's what they like. They want the divisions to be the most important part.
John, Andy Reid doesn't strike me as a head coach that is going to, you know, show emotion, especially for his quarterback. But every time I see a post-game speech or these guys getting into the locker room after a victory, Andy Reid, and in particular the last game that they just played, walks up to Mahomes and, you know, pats him on the chest. And, like, it's almost like, I want to give you a hug, but I can't do it in public right now because the cameras are on me, so I'm just going to go ahead and give you a nice little tap and give you a that-a-boy. But I've never seen Andy Reid disaffectionate towards a player before. And what is he saying about his quarterback, his young, stellar quarterback?
He loved it. It was funny because I know I was talking to some of the coaches back around week four about what they say about Mahomes. And where it all started was Matt Nagy, who was the quarterback coach last year for Andy Reid, and they said that he was one of the first. I mean, he had Matt had was a man crush on Patrick Mahomes, to a point where on Saturdays when they were in coaches' meetings, they would watch Texas Tech games, and then they all started to get a man crush on Patrick Mahomes. And so when it came to the draft, and they finally talked and showed Andy this is the guy that everybody wanted, and Andy wanted him too, that they were the surprise team to trade up to the 10th pick and be able to get him. And so, you know, that's where it all started. And I think that now you can see that, and you know, knowing Andy as long as I have, I mean, sure, he's had Brett Favre, and so naturally, you know, I can't say that Mahomes is the best quarterback he's ever been around, but I think you can see he's either the next best or going to be the best. And so, yeah, there's no question that there's an emotion, because I know that, you know, like when I ask him after the game about the cover zero blitzes and how they were able to overcome that, you know, Andy just gushed at what he saw from Patrick Mahomes. So, well, you know, it's like, hey, we won some plays, they won some plays, but again, Patrick was able to conquer so many things. And so I think you can see that, you know, because since being a head coach, even though he's had Donovan McNabb, this is the best quarterback he's ever had, and he appreciates that to a point that he can't imagine how excited he is.
Let's go out to the caller. Raphael has a question for the professor. What's going on, man?
Good morning. Should I start Andrew Luck or Aaron Rodgers? And really quick on flex, Calvin Ridley or
I don't know what your fantasy questions are, but it is pretty awesome the season Andrew Luck has had, though, John. Like the turnaround that he's had with the questions of his injury, it's been impressive seeing what he's been able to come back to his old self.
Yeah, no, and we're talking about comeback player of the year, and it's going to be one of two. It's either going to be J.J. Watt with his 11 or so sacks, or it's going to be Andrew Luck. And my vote goes to Andrew Luck because the fact that he's been, you know, really hot since the 1-5 start. I mean, first the offensive line came together, and they won six games with only one sack. And then you can see that Andrew's getting stronger and stronger each week. And what's amazing when you think about it, he only has one wide receiver, and that's T.Y. Hilton. And, of course, I mean, yeah, Eric Ebron has come in as a tight end, has done a good job, but he's really got nothing else. And so to do it with only one wide receiver, a shaky running game, because Marlon Mack's been off and on with hamstring injuries and injuries and all that stuff, it's been remarkable to see what Andrew's able to do. So he's back to being the Andrew Luck he was when he was taking at least the Colts deep into the playoffs and then one time to an AFC championship game.
Do you have any insight into what's kind of going on with the Raiders right now, seeing that there's this lawsuit with the city? Now they're not allowed to apparently go to Vegas. They might be playing in San Diego or something like that. Where do they stand with where the Raiders will play next year?
Well, they're out of Oakland. There's no question because that lawsuit, that 353 pages that was filed, I think it was yesterday, Oakland's done with them because they want the money, not the team. And so now they've got to find what's the next best thing. And so the order I think that they have is hoping that the 49ers will take them in and have them for one season. So at least they can play at Santa Clara. But it didn't help a couple of years ago when it asked Mark Davis about that. And he says, hey, it's easier for us to fly to L.A. than it is to drive from Oakland to Santa Clara. That doesn't help. Second option, I think, would be San Diego because that's one of the reasons that the Chargers ended up moving to the StubHub because they thought the Raiders were going to come down and claim San Diego. And so they wanted to at least cover the market and make sure that they didn't get the Raiders into that market. Then they started looking at other places like San Antonio. I don't get the idea that they would go Seattle, but there's no question. They've got to move. The best thing for them to be to go to Santa Clara because at least they don't have to move their practice facility.
That's so wild. So, like, with this lawsuit, like, are they allowed to be called the Oakland Raiders next year? Or are they just whatever city they're going to be, are they going to adopt that name?
Yeah, they're going to have to be called the Oakland Raiders playing in another place. And then, of course, then they'll be known as Vegas. And unfortunately, the stadium that they have right now that's available in Vegas is just too small and can't accommodate an NFL team.
Man, that is absolutely wild. All right, so, John, there's one more story going down here with the Miami Miracle I wanted to get your thoughts on. So, Kenyon Drake, when he ends up scoring the touchdown, he heaves the football into the crowd. The ball gets caught by somebody who's not a Dolphin fan and ends up selling it to somebody in the stands for $500 cash. Now this person is holding that ball ransom and wants $250,000 from Kenyon Drake to get the football. There's wavering between that or maybe Super Bowl tickets. What is the most John Clayton would pay for the Kenyon Drake miracle football if you were a Dolphins fan?
You know, because again, what you wonder about is like, you know, because certainly a great bargaining position because, you know, that's one where you almost want to say, hey, I'm going to call the Pro Football Hall of Fame and see if I can get them to bid on it. And of course, I mean, I think it's going to be one of those cherished things. And so, me personally, I wouldn't bid, but I think that, the non-fan is in a great bargaining position. And if you're Kenyon Drake, unfortunately, you're going to have to pay that amount of money to be able to try to get that football. And I hope that there's some price that he's willing to give it. If it's $250,000, it's unfortunate. But again, it's such a cherished piece of history that it deserves to go to the rightful owner, and that's Kenyon Drake.
I'm wondering if Stephen Ross might get involved in this one and saying, you know,
I don't see why he wouldn't.
Yeah, you put that ball up in a glass case somewhere in your stadium with a bunch of the pictures, imagery right behind it. There you go. You got your own trophy case.
Yeah, because, I mean, the owner would be able to afford it more than the player, and so maybe it could be a Dolphin purchase, not a player purchase.
That's crazy. John, thanks for the time this week. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's the Professor John Clayton joins us each and every week. Hey, let's give somebody right now, Rams, a chance to win a four-pack to Marvel Universe Live. See over 25 of your favorite Marvel superhero characters live in South Florida. Witness Marvel Universe Live with your family in a South Florida arena near you, January 10th through the 21st. You can get your tickets today at MarvelUniverseLive.com. But right now, caller number 5 on the contest line, 786-534-0790, 786-534-0790.
Did you get what Amber and Zazzle might have, or what do you get? You sounded pretty rough, man.
I know, man. I don't know what to tell you. I've been dragging through. My voice sounds like slop today. I don't know what to tell you. Slim was playing the cough from the press conference, the Adam Gase. Can you play the Adam Gase cut? Because what went down is Adam Gase was doing this this press conference, and somebody was hacking up a lung in the background.
It's probably happened a couple times. There's one I remember. when we played Baltimore in 2012. But, I mean, it wasn't – there was a little bit of difference, but not, like, not a huge swing.
That was me. I was at the press conference. What, so you're just throwing that every John
every time John was going to talk, Slim sabotaged by hitting the cough button.
Slim will take any opportunity to sabotage a John Clayton segment.
Yes, he will.
Well, did you notice I played the Rolling Stones coming in for that second?
I did not. I didn't notice that. No,
but no. I've been doing it like every time you hit the cough button. And you try to quietly cough.
You might be the most phlegmy person I've heard in radio. Like you are very, very phlegmy.
I agree with that.
Have you always been that way, or does the radio do that to you?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't notice it as much in my normal life because I didn't have to talk. So I don't have a good answer for that. It's a weird chicken and egg thing, man. I don't know. Anyway, did you have fun today?
I have fun every day that I'm with you, my man.
Thanks, man.
I really do.
I appreciate it. Levitard Show's next.